Morning, everybody, and welcome to the Bordier Live investment update for Q3 of 2017. I'm joined by Mark Sherwood, Director of Portfolio Management, and Ian Heap, Director of our Platform Management Service, both members of the Bordier Investment Committee. The investment committee met the last week of September, and this is really an update of their current thinking. And more importantly, thank you to everyone who submitted questions in the lead up to this call. We'll get through as many of those as possible, and if we don't get through your question, we'll come back to you individually. So I'm going to dive straight in. Just under the general heading of our positioning and outlook, I think it's well established now that we have had a defensive positioning for clients. Mark, perhaps I can ask you to start off with why are we still not willing to allocate additionally to equity?
Thanks, David. Well, over the last 8 years of the bull market, I think we've all seen that prices of most asset classes have been flattered by unprecedented levels of global monetary stimulus. In other words, the central banks have printed money and kept interest rates artificially low, and in doing so, the central banks have really provided the backbone of the bull market by essentially underwriting risk takers such as equity investors. What I would determine as an artificial environment appears to becoming to an end as central bank policy has begun to shift towards normalization of interest rates. What this means is that equity and bond markets will have to stand or fall on fundamentals rather than relying on artificial support. In terms of the policy shift, the US has clearly led the way with 4-quarter-point rises. However, one of the reasons that we're not willing to change is that in recent weeks the pace has accelerated to other banks. So the Bank of England, for example, has signalled an interest rate rise in November. And even the Central European Bank, which was, you know, lagging behind somewhat, is talking now about reducing asset purchases. So the shift towards, you know, higher interest rates or tighter monetary policy comes at a time when debt levels around the world have risen. So post the financial crisis, households reined in a bit of their debt.
Yeah.
But, you know, cheap money's been very hard to resist. And therefore, you know, this rise in interest rates, the impact on consumer spending could be quite challenging, and therefore that will put pressure on the overall level of economic growth. So, you know, this is a very tricky period of transformation away from, you know, this great experiment of quantitative easing, and now, you know, we're entering a new phase of the cycle. You've also got to remember the central banks, in addition to putting up interest rates, have got huge bloated balance sheets having bought all of these assets. And at some stage, you know, they've got to reduce those balance sheets. And, it has an impact. And if you just look at, for example, believe it or not, there are some Russian government bonds that yield less than their US Treasury equivalent. So that's in the bond market.
Yeah.
Add to the mix that share prices have been rising faster than earnings. So in other words, valuations of equities have got richer than they've been for some considerable time. It's not difficult to imagine that volatility or increase in volatility is just around the corner.
So there's a lot of uncertainty out there. We'll come on to inflation in a second. Ian, perhaps you could just summarise what are the specific changes that have occurred since last quarter?
Well, I think the points that Mark makes there were fundamentally very strong throughout the investment committee. We're mindful that there are a lot of headwinds and tripwires, which two terms there we've used quite some time. They haven't gone away. They've got more complex, but the complacency around them has meant that fundamentally markets have moved forward. What we've done within the portfolio since the last investment committee is readjust our present equity stance in the UK. We haven't upped equity per se, but what we've done is taken certain profits within mid and small cap, and part of that is by selling out the Henderson UK Equity Income and Growth Fund, not because we dislike the fund, it's more the positioning and how that maps back to our overall thought at investment committee level. If you look at the numbers for mid and small cap, you've seen year-to-date growth at 1.12%, which is versus 6% return on FTSE 100. We think that probably won't stand going forward with more weakness to sterling in certain events where most people are aware that FTSE 100, you're looking at probably international earnings of about 75%. So we're benefiting by moving further into the Franklin UK Equity Income Fund, who have to have a minimum of 80% exposure to FTSE 100. The other 20%, they can fish in other markets, even in Europe, but typically cherry-pick from the best-performing mid and small caps. So that's one change that we've done. Another one is by assessing the potential risk with maybe a rate hike by the MPC 2nd of November. I looked on the certain gambling site earlier, and I think betting is an 83% chance at the moment of some kind of rate hike, probably 25 basis points in November, to move back to where we were before at 0.5%. So what we examined within the micro investment committee, where we look at the individual holdings, was to say, how do we further reduce duration risk sensitivity around a 1% increase or an increase in base rates, and how that impacts valuations of certain areas of the fixed income market. We assessed that it would be best to, again, move out of certain long duration funds, and in one case, Henderson UK Index Linked Bond Fund. And this is certainly not a Henderson kidney move. In fact, of selling two Henderson funds, it was just the longest duration exposure that we had within the index linked sector. So we sold out of that. We have made further adjustments to cash, pending what we're looking for is ideally some kind of correction of maybe 10% or above, which is a technical correction, where we will again consider the option to add back to equities, perhaps in the UK, more likely to Europe, where QE is still supporting markets there. And that will give us a chance to reassess and maybe move that to more of a neutral position. But at the moment, we aren't moving upwards on the equity scale.
Okay. Obviously, headlines this week were very much, aside from Brexit, were centered around inflation figures. Does that affect or change any of our thinking in relation to client portfolios based on the investment committee at the end of September?
I don't think the inflation figures came as any surprise. I think they were pretty much as we had expected. I think Ian has just alluded to one of the changes we made, which was to shorten up duration. You know, whether in fact now with the Bank of England having moved or appearing to move earlier than perhaps expected to tackle inflation ticking above 3%. The impact really has been on the index-linked market, and as I said, we have been reducing our duration in that area. And just, you know, the volatility within the index-linked market, at the long end of the market, you know, there have been capital losses of 10% in recent months. Now, that could signal that, in fact, this rate rise in the UK has caught people slightly on the hop, and to some extent we were a little bit cynical as to whether the bank would actually put up rates because they didn't want to disturb the housing market. But clearly Carney and Co have decided that actually just taking off the quarter point rise that was, you know, in effect after the referendum, which quite frankly we didn't think was necessary. It's just caught that market out a little bit, but in terms of the inflation figures, no surprises really for us, and no, apart from shortening up duration, no real impact on portfolios.
Sure. Perhaps let me just move on to a theme that we've talked about to a number of you who are listening and other advisor firms working with, which is looking at the correlation potentially between equity markets and bond markets, and that should some form of market correction happen, you know, the potential that both of those asset classes would fall. So my question is how would Bordier portfolios cope with a dual correction in both equity and bond markets?
Well, I think when you look at exposure across a typical client portfolio, if you take balance, for example, we have a 40% target for equity markets, and then within that you're going to have a good slug of the rest of the portfolio in fixed interest, so perhaps maybe another 25%. With that kind of exposure, if both sectors, you know, both asset classes did face severe headwinds, there will be some impact on the portfolio. You cannot avoid that. even with the exposure that we have to alternative investments, which we've been building on coming up to Brexit and post-Brexit. So would there be, you know, maybe capital impact over the short term? Yes. However, the work we've already put in place in terms of moving more defensive on equity exposure and having international biases in there, and that bias is very clear on balanced growth and adventurous, where we have very strong footholds in international markets, where events such as Brexit, we foresee, will have more of an issue for the UK. So with IMF revising down growth targets for the UK and further concerns about how Brexit negotiations are going, even after May's dinner with Juncker, we're waiting to see what comes out of the further discussions this week and whether or not they can actually increase the news flow around positive side of Brexit. So the reduced equity positions and the international bias and the recent changes that we've made with smaller mid-cap into larger cap will help defend against that. In terms of bonds, again, the work that we've been doing over the last 18 months has been taking profits, been focusing on index links as well, and bringing down that duration and spreading the width of those exposures by using corporates and strategic bond managers. So again, active is key, where they are constantly looking at their underlying positions and flexing them around probably market conditions that we agree with. If you go back probably 2 years within our wealth management service, we would have had a tracker in there. I think June 2014 actually is when we sold out one, which was a whole of market tracker, something that you just wouldn't want in there today.
This dual correction potential of equity and bond markets, is it likely?
I don't think it is. I think that central banks are very much aware that, you know, they have to manage interest rates back to some sort of normalisation in an orderly fashion. I think that the impact on bond markets is likely to be a longer term impact. One of the things that we have done, as we just explained, is shorten up duration in case there is this, you know, a correction in bond markets. However, it is difficult to see that there's going to be any surprises on the upside in terms of massive moves in interest rates. But what I would say is, if you don't shorten up duration in this market and you don't move some money into things like the short duration credit funds that we have, and you're exposed to the longer end of the market, unless you think interest rates are coming back to 0.25% anytime in the next cycle, which let's say for the next 7 to 10 years, there's a danger that you actually permanently destroy the capital.
Yep.
You don't get it back. And, you know, part of our job is to make sure not only that we invest in assets that make clients more positive returns, but it also, you know, a huge part of this job is avoiding those areas, the minefields that really do destroy the capital on a long-term basis. And I think we've protected against that on the bond side. As Ian said, we've got the alternatives. If there was a dual correction, our portfolios would hold up pretty well.
I think a breakaway from the lower for longer interest rate policy, which has obviously provided support for equity and bond markets, if that happened, maybe with perhaps central banks mishandling any transition to tighter monetary policy and unwinding of QE, that could prompt a problem for both areas. And certainly in 2018, there is a risk of that. I think as we go to the end of this year, right now with market highs, we're seeing it less likely, but 2018 will be a mind your eye moment.
Yeah, we protected against this scenario by having a very, very strong weighting in alternatives.
Yeah.
I think in the old days, just thinking back 30 years ago to what I was doing, sitting in front of my screen, staring at it in utter disbelief that the market could come off several hundred points in only a matter of minutes. We protected against that, by having this alternative section of the portfolio.
I want to move on now to some common questions from our advisor supporters. I mean, this one is very consistent across all of them, and trying to put ourselves into your shoes, advising clients every single day. If a client comes to you and has cash to invest right now, given where market valuations are, What should you do?
I think, frankly, clients shouldn't be swayed necessarily by the current market backdrop. It has to be discussed clearly at a client meeting, which we're very happy to do. But I think advisors, as they rightly do, they remind clients about their appetite for risk. Now, whether they're using a risk profiler or as what we call a fireside chat, it is about risk appetite and definitely about investment time horizon. So that's one key thing. Our strategies are already reflecting our investment commission committee's cautious positioning. So, you know, we have a slightly higher than average cash position, we're more defensive, and we have the alternatives in there. So we are taking that defensive position for clients and building out a multi-asset active portfolio. So there is no need to sit on the sideline and be fearful of markets, but you have to be mindful. So given market levels, I think clients often come on board nervous when they see high after high. They're waiting for some magical correction that perhaps won't come in the next 2 weeks. So when we build client positions within the wealth management service, I think phasing and that kind of aspect is key.
And that's my next question, which was, again, another common question we're asked. Linked to that, how can we accommodate phasing in our investments for clients and advisors?
Our central stance is that, you know, our current asset allocation across our strategies reflects the sort of risks and opportunities that we see in markets. So we would say, you know, if someone has money to go into one of our strategies, that they should put it into the strategy, you know, relatively quickly. However, that's our view, and we understand that clients may take a different view, and advisors may take a different view, and it's their money, their hard-earned money, and what we would normally do in those circumstances is agree how we're going to phase the money into the market over what period. We reflect that back to the client and the advisor in an engagement letter so that we're absolutely clear what the roadmap is.
Yeah. So the answer is that we're absolutely open for that conversation.
Absolutely.
It has to be individual for each individual client. Mm-hmm. Let's have a conversation about what the right plan is.
One thing I would point out, if you are coming direct with your clients to the Bordier MPS solution, phasing has to be done by cash transfers in by the client. That's just one point to raise, because otherwise the cash on portfolio will be aligned to strategy as part of the agreement in the T's and C's.
Thanks, Ian. Obviously, on this call, we're talking not just about new clients, but we're also talking about existing clients who've been with us for short, medium, and the long term. As we approach the end of the year, what should advisors be saying to their clients regarding Bordier's performance?
Well, we're producing positive returns across our strategy. I don't think that, you know, it is either practical or people should expect us to construct portfolios that outperform the comparators in active risk consultants year on year. Obviously, what really we're trying to concentrate on is providing clients with meeting their aims and their goals over the longer term. You know, and that's a market cycle. We could quite easily, given the sort of uncertainties and vulnerabilities to this market that we see, just have carried on regardless. But clients, you know, 99.9% of clients can't afford to lose capital. And we're trying to protect it in what we see as a vulnerable period after an 8-year bull market.
I think if you look at our documentation, you'll keep seeing the comments that we quote from Ark saying that we're a safe pair of hands. When you look at the 3-year volatility, we looked at some numbers 30th of June, all our portfolios are below the volatility of UK government bonds. That includes our adventurous. So we have between 80% and 100% equity exposure in our 4-year adventurous strategy, and at 3-year volatility was 7.6% versus 8.5% of UK government bonds. So it's important to remember that we've had amazing returns from UK gilts and amazing returns from equity markets. Will they continue in a straight line? Unlikely. What are we trying to do is make consistent long-term returns for our clients and making sure that we protect against the downside. That is what we've been doing, but we haven't given up on returns by doing that because the alpha we've generated. So when you look at Sharpe ratios, which are typically above, if they're above 1%, they are good numbers. For cautious all the way through to adventurous, they are above one. We are generating fantastic returns from our asset selection, so our capture rate of equity returns are above where we would expect to be if we were just buying a tracker within those kind of markets. Absolute returns are returning, active funds are returning, so our selections are strong. We are just not willing at the moment to take a gamble with clients' money and add to equities.
Great. Thanks, guys. I'm conscious of just moving on and time. Obviously, the latest performance pack will be out, I believe, in the next couple of days, along with appropriate commentary. Any performance-related specific questions, and obviously we'll talk to you directly about that. Obviously, the common hot topic we talk about a number of times on these calls, income, and specifically sustainable income. So an open question, really, Ian. Our guidance to advisors for clients who are seeking sustainable income in the current environment, how should they approach it, or how would we approach it or advise them to approach it in relation to Bordier portfolio?
So it's an interesting question, and certainly the way it was phrased would be sustainable income, because there's quite a lot of clients who have suffered with cash rates being so low and are desperate for MPC to put money up, as opposed to the clients who are laden with debt right now at near all-time highs. It's the sustainable part which is key. Caution is definitely required when targeting an uplifted yield. So when we look at rates from bond funds or equity funds, I just ran down the asset allocation earlier, and our highest yielding equity fund is in Asia, and that's yielding 6.1%. A typical short duration bond fund, even corporate fund, may be returning perhaps 1.5%. So you have retirees being squeezed and turned into bond proxies looking for stronger yields from equity markets. Their asset allocation is being turned on its head, and frankly, that fills me with fear. So what we do with clients is we sit them down and say, what are you looking to achieve? And perhaps it's best to take half of that target and target the yield, the natural income, the dividends, the interest, and take the rest from capital returns over the period. So when we look at our, say, cautious portfolio, where you may be expecting a yield at the moment of about 1.6%. The actual annualized returns are, let's say, north of 4%, with volatility again of about 4%. If we can take 2% from capital, 2% roughly from income, and give them 4%, which is quite a common request from clients, we're not going to destroy capital. We're not going to erode it by actually paying them that money. And if they're in the wealth management service, commonly we'll put the first 12 months' payments in a cash reserve account, and we will send that to them on a regular basis so that, A, fundamentally they can live, which is what they want the yield for, and they're not going to be scared by what the impact is on the portfolio. Chasing income right now is not wise, and a lot of the underlying investments in some of these solutions are very, very similar. So if you buy a UK equity income fund, you're going to have some big names in there that are held across the board. Last time we run our numbers, Galaxo is in 93% of UK equity income funds. And we've seen a lot of people drop out of that sector because, frankly, they don't want to be buying at all-time highs. So in a presentation we did earlier where we said that, you know, if Galaxo caught a cold, which, you know, I thought it was a good game, you know, a lot of UK equity income investors are going to feel the same fall. So we have to be mindful and we have to be careful and not chase yields when we've sold out of some of the stronger yielding bond funds over the last 2 years, and removed commercial property, which again was a strong yielder, because we don't think it's right to be there. So we will work with advisors and clients and manage them around a yield target. What we won't want to do is start targeting natural yields of 4-5%.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we've seen in our analysis that a number of investments that have sort of somewhat higher levels of yield are certainly pushing clients, whether they knew it or not, inadvertently up the risk scale, and that's something I guess we want to avoid.
I mean, I think, you know, let's go back to if it looks too good to be true, it probably is.
Yes.
And when you think where interest rates are at the moment and some of these yields that are on offer, I mean, there is trouble up the road somewhere.
Yeah. Final couple of points that we want to move on to, looking forward and really where, you know, we know that the Bordier proposition is somewhat different to a number of our peer groups out there. Common across our portfolios at the moment, a significant allocation to our alternative section, which obviously I know has a broad meaning. What is this doing for us right now?
Well, it is providing, aiming to provide, you know, real returns, cash plus type returns, by employing different techniques to those managers where their only option is to buy shares. So it's the skill of the manager rather than the direction of the market that we're relying on. They're not going to shoot the lights out if the market rises sharply. However, in flat to falling markets, you know, they're going to provide us with that defensive quality that we're looking for.
And how we overall felt about our alternative exposure, has it done the job?
Well, I think there's a bit of a misconception about a lot of the holdings where some of them are designed, frankly, to be dull. We're looking at LIBOR plus a bit, because in a falling market, if they are still returning 1.5% after fees, they've done their job. If I run down the numbers for 1 year, since the end of August, where we were looking at the last investment committee, we had one fund return 0.37%, hardly, you know, going to set the world alight. Don't forget, you've also got a holding in there, Atlantic House, that returned 12.9%. So on average, you're probably looking at perhaps a 4-5% return over a 12-month period. That is not boring. All it's doing is they're defending against downturns, producing returns irrespective of equity markets, and we can also put into that gold, where across our wealth management service, we added 6% across the board. Again, a real asset, inflation hedge, to play on dollar, and we have to look at positions like that. Not everything goes up in a straight line.
Sure. We mentioned earlier that we had adjusted or fine-tuned the balance of the underlying holdings in our portfolio. We had allocated additionally to cash weightings, not in huge amounts. When will we deploy those cash weightings back into portfolios in terms of putting that money to work?
Well, I think if you're asking about sort of equities, when markets are more representative of where we are in the current market cycle and conditions. So, you know, we will be looking for opportunities to deploy that cash.
Yeah, we spoke about a meaningful correction. So, you know, we're talking about 10%. Even if 10% came, we would certainly be in a room talking about it and saying, is now the right time? If it was a case of catching a falling knife and another missile had been launched over Japan, but this time would actually hit something, then 10% would probably still mean sit on your hand. But it really is down to assessing the situation. We are not scared of equities. We are mindful that there will be opportunities going forward. We are still zero weight to the places like emerging markets. We've taken big calls, as is our job, in the past about Europe, Japan, emerging markets, commercial property, etc. We have a little bit more cash than normal, so defensive 8%. When we go up to adventurous, about 3%. And I would add there's always going to be 2% in our MPS strategies, because when we sit on platforms, we have to factor in cash flows, etc. But, you know, there are opportunities coming up that we foresee where we could, A, dip back into equities. Again, when we just spoke about opportunities in Europe around Brexit and other factors, or even US, but there's been a lot of talk about valuations within the US, and you'll probably see even in the press comments from Credit Suisse and Vanguard recently about it just doesn't make sense the way that markets are going. Now, whether we believe that Trump is the savior of the US and he's going to lead markets onwards and upwards with deregulation and to the extreme of bringing back the coal industry, I think the jury's out on that one. But we will deploy when the time is right. And we are assessing that with our research team at all times. It is not a one-month or quarterly viewpoint. We are always looking at underlying funds and the backdrop of markets. And we work with advisors and clients if they have any special requirements around their positioning, because with a bespoke portfolio, they can have whatever exposure they want to cash, equity, or any other asset class.
Okay. Final couple of thoughts. What can Bordier clients expect from their portfolios in the last quarter of 2017 and if at all possible, looking forward into the beginning part of 2018?
Well, you just dust off my crystal ball. I, investment committee to take, you know, the same care and attention that we have always taken with strategies, and navigate, trust us to navigate through what we see as potentially some more tricky times ahead. I think it is a very short period that you're asking about, and it's it isn't really in our nature to forecast returns over such short periods of time.
Any final thoughts?
Well, if I was going to put my negative hat on, tight monetary conditions, squeeze consumers, stretched equity valuations, compressed bond yields, escalating debt levels, they would be the tripwires that we keep talking about. We are mindful that markets could very well continue to grind higher. We look at the rest of this year and perhaps see if further instances around North Korea, geopolitical, we just look at the backdrop across Europe and wider afield, so what we'd say the typical traditional governing parties have faced a torrid time. That's starting to stabilise a bit, but there are still pressures out there where a few more of these shocks to the system could cause a wobble to markets. It may cause people to pause for thought about rate hikes. Again, the Fed is considering their position and very likely to increase, so we will react around those decisions. But we also have made decisions preempting a lot of those strikes where we continue to position where we think is best. 2018 will be probably a slightly more difficult year, but we're here to support you and your clients and make risk-adjusted returns based around their risk appetite.
Excellent. Thanks, Ian. Thank you, Mark, for your viewpoints. My takeaway is really, as I've said to many of you before, we are here first and foremost to help preserve client capital in difficult times. We do participate in better than equity market returns where we have equity exposure. That's what Ian was talking about earlier. So we're not getting no return for clients. We're getting actually above average returns where we have the exposure, which is good news. We're a good home for those clients bringing you new money where you have to give advice right now, particularly where market valuations are. And, we're a good sort of defensive option for clients to have as a makeup within their investment solutions. And finally, it's to say, as ever, thank you for the support you've given us so far. As Ian said, we are on hand to provide you with whatever information, detail, support you need to help answer client questions or position Bordier in relation to the recommendations you're making right now. You'll be getting the full summary of our investment committee thoughts from the end of September out to you by email, along with our latest Q3 net of fees performance data as well. And nothing else to say other than to thank everyone for listening and have a good Thursday, and we'll see you out and about in the not too distant future. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this recording of the Bordier Live Q3 2017 Investment Update Call, which took place on Thursday, 19th of October 2017. We would ask you to spend a moment of your time to listen to the following regulatory wording. This recording is issued and approved by Bordier NC UK PLC, which is a company incorporated in England. Registered address, 23 King Street, St James's, London, SW1Y6QY. Bordier NC UK PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. This recording is not intended as an offer to acquire or dispose of any security or interest in any security. Whilst every effort has been made to ensure that the information contained in this recording is correct, the directors in Bordier NC UK PLC can take no responsibility for any action taken or not taken as a result of the matters discussed.